This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show with me, T. Xiao Eek. On our health and living segment today, consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh joins me for his monthly show. How are you today, Dr. Rajesh?
Very well,
Sherry.
Thank you so much.
And today we'll be discussing hip problems. And you know, this could range from something like a twinge in your groin or your hip when you stand up. It could manifest as some stiffness down your thighs or buttocks. It could be pain as you, you know, are standing and you settle your weight on one hip. Quite a lot of issues that could crop up. Could be signs of a hip problem. That's what I want to talk to Dr. Rajesh about today. But of course, starting with some sort of an explainer about how hips work, and then hopefully we can move on to what are the kinds of hip problems that could develop and what to do when these kinds of issues come up. So that's your cue to call us if you have any questions for Dr. Rajesh. 0377 332 900. You can also WhatsApp us 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Get those questions in now so that I can get Dr. Rajesh to address them as we go along. Some sort of an anatomy class, I think, Dr. Rajesh, as we always start with, when we talk about the hips, what parts are we referring to?
Okay, so the hip is basically where the thigh bone, the femur, joins the pelvis. So that sort of...
This is like that song.
It's like the song, yes, it does. The reference to the hip is sometimes perhaps not so clear, because patients are more used to telling me my back hurts or my thigh hurts. They're a little bit embarrassed to say my backside hurts because, you know, that's really where hip pain will come. Hip pain will either come generally in the groin or in the buttock. Although there is a special category of hip pain that refers onto the front of the knee. And I can think of two patients now whose knees I've treated. And then they say, yes, but I've still got this nagging pain on the front of my thigh here, just above where my knee is when I'm sitting down. And, you know, they sort of keep massaging their thigh and they keep rubbing at their knee. And it's a little bit difficult for them to comprehend that the pain that they have in the knee is actually a referred or a shadow pain from the thigh. So it's less in adults, much more in children. But hip pain generally, or hip problems generally, refer with pain in those areas.
All right. But when, so I think that, again, it comes back to what most of us have, which is a rather shallow understanding of the hip joint, where I would imagine for most of us, we know where the hip bones are, where it protrudes out from the sides. But as you've explained, it can extend front, back, lower down quite a ways as well. So, you know, if you can walk us through, perhaps a good way to understand it would be when we're using the hip joint and bending it, what's exactly happening?
Okay, so... I'll warn you, you asked for it, all right? So let's go through a hip anatomy. Now the hips, the simplistic understanding that we give children is that the hip is a ball and socket joint. Okay, so it's basically you have sort of a ball, and then the ball sits in a socket, and then you can manipulate the ball in a socket. It's sort of called a ball and socket joint. But that really doesn't capture the essence, the clinical essence of what happens when you're dealing with the hip. So I have an alternative analogy. Let's say that you have a clothesline. So, you know, people know what a clothesline is. It's a metal T thing, and then the wires go across, and then there's another metal T on the other side. Now, the correct way to understand the hip is to consider that the clothesline, the metal T, where the horizontal part joins the vertical part to form the T, that is actually a hinge. Mm-hmm. So that means that your clothesline can sort of dip on either side very easily. Okay. Or another sort of really good way to practically imagine the function of a hip joint is to look at a pair of scissors or a pair of pliers. So if you have a pair of scissors and you're holding the sort of handles of a scissors and you're opening and shutting the scissors, there is a fulcrum of a pivot point. And that fulcrum or pivot point is basically necessary for you to be able to open and close the sensor. So the sort of reciprocating movements. And I think that's one of the key concepts that I think is missing in the anatomy when you talk about the hip joint. Because if you say, well, the hinge of a pair of scissors is basically a metal rivet bolted to two pieces of steel, it doesn't really convey a lot of sophistication. But if you look at the function of a pair of scissors and you look at the function of a pair of pliers, they're actually quite sophisticated because you've got reciprocal movements. You know, your upward movement of your hand, the top finger will move the bottom blade and your bottom fingers will move the top blade. And then when you close it, it goes the other way around.
Mm.
And forces that apply are also different. So if you want to cut a thick piece of paper, you jam it, you open the scissor all the way and you jam it right into the mouth of the scissor so that you're near the fulcrum point. Because if you're away from the fulcrum point, then it's difficult to cut something that's really, really heavy.
That's right.
And I think those are sort of the forces which are in play when you talk about the hip joint. So the way you should think about a hip joint is basically you've got a triangle with a flat base on top, and you've got the spine that sits on top of that flat base in the middle, and then you've got the two sloping sides, and you've got two ball and socket joints on the two sloping sides. So there's this inescapable relationship when you talk about the hip that you have to talk about the spine. And unfortunately, the sort of the hip, the buttock, the groin gets lost in the shadow of its very famous cousin, the spine. So, you know, there's lots and lots of talk about back pain and different types of back pain, different treatments about back pain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But really, the spine and the hip work together in one unit. So if you want to think about an isolated hip joint, it's not very complicated. You have a ball and then you have a ball that sits within a socket. And basically, it's a relatively stable ball and socket configuration of joint. You know, like you may have in any other mechanical device, like in fans, in cars. It's a stable configuration of joint. But I think that if you just look at it in terms of the pure mechanics and don't understand the biomechanics, then you do yourself a disservice in terms of understanding how hip joint problems affect people.
So if we have a better understanding of the sophistication of how the hips are, you can't talk about them separate from the spine and the movements of the legs, does that mean that a lot of problems that people experience perhaps with their back, if they identify as a back pain or they identify as you said, you know, pain on the thigh or the front of the knee, it's actually traced back to the hips?
I think so. And I think that that's probably sort of the missing space, as it were. You know, there's quite a lot of information available on what's happening with the back. There's quite a lot of information available with what's happening in the knee. But if you look at the hip sort of that connecting zone between the two. So there's a few, just today, for example, so I had somebody who came in with severe acute buttock pain, and he was unable to basically stand and walk. So his complaint was, this hurts really bad, I can't stand and walk. So, you know, I examined him. I didn't think the pain was coming from inside of his hip joint. I thought the pain was coming from some of the big structures behind the hip joint, right? So I sent him off for an X-ray. The X-ray showed some wear and tear change, but look, you know, he's 65. He did a manual job, and my habit is to X-ray both sides, right? So the X-ray report recently came back showing osteoarthritis of the hip, and he got worried, and he said, Doc, what's this osteoarthritis business? Why do I have it? Do I need an operation? So the logic was very simple. You have two hips, one hurts and the other doesn't hurt, and the X-ray shows same changes in both. So clearly something else is going on.
Like?
Right. Well, so for him, what he had was he had a nerve that stretches around the back of the hip joint. So the hip joint actually goes through quite a high range of motion. It can go through about 120 degree range of motion. So, you know, if you take a ruler that's straight and you bent it at 90 degrees and then you kept bending it, that's, you know, it's quite sort of an acute angle that the hip can go around, and there are structures at the back of the hip and the front of the hip. At the back of the hip, there's a big nerve called the sciatic nerve. So what he had was he had acute sciatica. So he had irritation of the sciatic nerve, not coming from his back, coming from his butt.
Mm.
Right? And so in this sort of situation, the diagnosis is really a logical one because his pain is clearly in and around the buttock. Then the question is, what structures live in and around the buttock? The principal structure being the hip joint. Now, this is where the whole biomechanic comes in, because when he walked in, he had no alteration of his biomechanic. His machine was working. How he used his machine was in keeping with pain. And that's basically how I make my decisions, because if you look at, as I said, if you look at the hip as, you know, sort of the hip examination as a compendium of examining three zones, which is, you know, the right buttock, the left buttock, and the spine, then with the legs attached to it. He didn't have there's a thing called a Trendelenburg gait. So remember what I told you about the scissor, where when you move your top finger, you're moving the bottom blade and vice versa. There's something similar in the hip called the Trendelenburg test. So that means that when we get you to stand on one leg,
mm-hmm.
what happens to the other hip? Does the other hip drop or not? So if I got you to stand on your right leg
mm-hmm.
and your right hip was diseased, your left pelvis would drop.
Mm.
Because you're unable, your right leg's supposed to lift the pelvis up. So again, you go back to that scissor example. If you held a scissor by the middle hinge and then you moved one of the blades, one of the handles would have to move.
Mm.
And so obviously, if you held the scissor by the bottom blade, that means the bottom blade is fixed, then the top blade has to move. But if the movement is reciprocal, whether you look at it from the blade side or you look at it from the handle side. So that concept's quite important, because what happens is when you have a positive Trendelenburg test, it means that sort of the global biomechanic of the hip has failed. So I've got a pair of kitchen scissors that came from IKEA that have got the sort of little hinge lock thing where you turn them beyond a certain angle, you can undo the blades, then you've got like two halves of a pair of scissors, and then you can wash them, the kitchen scissors, which I think was a pretty cool idea. But, you know, one day when I was assembling those scissors, they got a little bit stuck. So, I had a little bit of difficulty putting that pair of scissors back together until I realized that we have two scissors and I had two left blades together. So, one left, you know, one or two top blades, so one top blade and one bottom blade. And that got me thinking a lot about what happens in the sort of global functionality of the hip. The hip's relatively quite, I wouldn't use the word forgiving, I'd use the word adaptive. The mechanisms of the hip are generally quite adaptive. So whatever you throw at the hip, generally it will accommodate to what you give it. Which is partly why you see buttocks of such different shapes and sizes. You know, people have different shapes pelvis, different shapes spines, and different shapes legs. And the hips have to match those three things together. Mm-hmm. So you may have somebody with a very wide pelvis and a very long spine and very short legs. So the accommodations for that combination occur around the hip joint. So the global function of the hip gives a lot of shape to people. So if you're interested in people watching and go, I wonder what's going on there. If you look at people's general shapes, the lower half of the body shape, a large amount of it comes from what's going on in and around the hips. So that's why for body sculpting, you know, they do things like lunges to lift the buttocks, for example, in order to sort of reshape that whole area. But just sort of in terms of how the whole machine is assembled, the stuff that happens around the hip is quite interesting in that the hip is relatively forgiving and adapts to a lot of things. So it adapts to minor differences in limb length. So lots of people have slightly different leg lengths.
Mm-hmm.
And you can accommodate a leg length discrepancy of about half a centimeter without noticing it. And that adaptation occurs at the hip.
At the hips, all right.
You can have a mild scoliosis. That means your back's not completely straight, but your lower limbs still function well. And that adaptation occurs at the hips itself.
All right. So hips are bearing a lot of, as you said, I think the perfect word for it, adaptations, in order to ensure the other parts of our body are functioning or are able to help us to function. Now, we have to go for a quick break, but when we come back, we'll address a few questions that have been coming in and also talk a little bit about, you know, if we, coming from that understanding that you've shared with us about what the hips do, how do we know when something's gone wrong or when there's a problem? Pain is something that you've mentioned, but, you know, functionally, are there other things that we can look for as well? But do, call us if you have any questions, 0377-332-900, WhatsApp 0187-89-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. If you have any questions for our consultant, orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh, who's on the show today to talk about hip issues. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. On the show with me today, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're talking about hip problems. If you have any questions, call us 0377-332-900, WhatsApp 0187-89-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, you've gone through what the hips should be doing, you know, and you've described some presentations, you know, how patients come to you. They describe problems or pain in their back or thigh, although actually what they mean is the groin or buttocks. But, you know, you've had patients talking about pain on the front of their thigh, extending down to the front of their knee. Now, what are indications that something is wrong with the hip? You know, even when you've talked about this kind of pain, what does that pain actually feel like?
I think the presentation will either come from the patient or from somebody around the patient. And from the patient, it's usually pain or stiffness. So that means when they sit down for a long time, they try to get up that particular part, you know, they feel that part. And then when they start making a movement, the pain gets better. The other really common presentation in our society is the inability to sit on the floor, right? So culturally, we sit on the floor, you know, for, you know, even day-to-day home life, social functions, religious functions. The ability to sit cross-legged on the floor or to be able to sit on the floor is something that's very socially prevalent. And the challenge with hip diseases and that is that you lose the ability to sit on the floor because you can't fold your hip out of the way. So the best way I describe that is to say, imagine you're wearing a pair of shorts. And the shorts suddenly become five times too thick and two sizes too small. That feeling of restriction of movement is basically what hip disease feels like. And the reason is largely because there is a structure on the inside of the body, which is called the capsule. So the capsule is like a fibrous husk, as it were. So if you take a coconut and you say that the joint is the coconut nut itself, then all the stuff that's around the coconut, like a husk, is called the capsule of the joint. But as opposed to a coconut where it's relatively stiff, in a joint that's sort of relatively mobile and flexible. What happens when you have joint disease is the capsule becomes very, very thick and very, very tight. So it's that capsular thickening that restricts people's movement. And that's the complaint that they come with. They say that I used to be able to sit on the floor, you know, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago, but I slowly lost the ability to sit on the floor. And that's usually a reasonably strong telltale sign that something's funny is going on in the hip.
On that note, somebody texted in to concur with that kind of symptom that you were describing. She says she can't, she feels it when she sits on the floor to do washing or to do her pedicure, which I think is a great example of the posture she would be sitting in. She does also say that what she's experiencing is not pain. But in Mandarin, she would call it suan. I don't know if you're familiar, but I think the best translation would be an aching sensation.
I think the correct English term is nulliness, N-U-L-I-N-E-S-S. I know, sort of, it's one of the super weird things that you would never think of looking up. But I've had multiple, you know, having done this long enough, you know, I recognize the terms in all the local sort of dialects. but I couldn't find the word for angin or shintong or any of these sort of descriptors used. And the English word is nulliness. So if anybody's interested, they can go look it up. Mm-hmm. It's on Wikipedia.
Nulliness. Okay, all right. So would you attribute that to the thickening of the capsule, as you mentioned?
Okay, so this is the thing about hip joints, right? Or joints in general, we don't really give enough credit to all the supportive tissues around the joint. And we spend too much time talking about what's happening in the ball and socket, so as in on the cartilage surface itself. So I think that this idea of pain coming or, you know, symptoms coming from periarticular structures or things around the joint is quite important. And so in this particular instance, the thing that I would be interested in assessing is to try to work out whether the symptoms come from inside the hip joint or outside the hip joint from the associated stabilizing structures for the hip.
All right. We have another question. This one's quite technical. I'm going to have to ask you to help me, to walk me through the terms here. Yep, wants to know, what's the best intervention for CAM FAI with a grade 3-4 labral tear? Surgery as a last resort, of course.
Okay, so basically what this person is saying is you have a ball and socket, and the ball is impinging on a corner of the socket. That's basically what he's saying. And then, so what he's basically giving me is he's giving me an MRI gradation. Now, I'll sort of take a step back and say you're missing the bigger picture, unintended. Really done there is you really zoom down using a microscope to say, or in this case an MRI, figuratively a microscope, to say, look, here's this little corner of the table. So, you know, let's just look at furniture in a room, right? What Yap's mm-hmm. telling me is he's telling me that he's got a bunch of furniture in a room and one of the corners of his table's damaged, and he's got sort of a very detailed technical report about how that corner of the table is damaged and asking me, you know, about the technical repairs of a damaged corner of the table. What he hasn't told me about the information that I don't have is what's the arrangement of the table in the room. You know, if the table's immediately behind the door and every time you open the door and the door bangs the table, well, then, you know, let's not talk about fixing the corner of the table that's chipped. Let's talk about moving the table. You know, so that's really one of the sort of big concepts with the hip that people miss, is that they miss its picture in the bigger biomechanical space and they just get stuck on the local pathology. I can tell you that if you don't alter the biomechanic, you can do whatever you like for the local pathology. It's just going to come back. It's common sense, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So how the person is moving, what kind of activities they're doing, what their functions are like?
No, just the basic biomechanics. So look at what's the alignment of your hip to your pelvis, what's your limb length, you know, is your pelvis tilted, do you have a mild scoliosis, what's your muscular development? What's the flexibility of each individual hip? You know, is one hip hypermobile? Is the other hip restricted? You know, what's the situation in your knees? What's the situation in your ankles? So sort of the whole mechanical picture, as it were. Mm. So once you can assess the whole mechanical picture, the analogy is literally just rearranging the furniture in the room. And once you rearrange the furniture in the room, that little corner of table that's chipped, you can either just sort of tuck away where nobody's going to see. That's not going to give him any pain or functional limitation. I'm not saying that that corner isn't chipped anymore, but I'm saying that it doesn't matter that it's chipped.
Now, Aaron is asking, I fell during a badminton game landing on my buttocks. Now I have pain when I move my right leg whenever I get in or out of the car. I have been on painkillers for a week, but now I feel the pain towards my waist. Oh, he's saying this happened 3 months ago.
Okay, so this is one of those classic examples of supporting structure. So the problem that he has to me is clearly coming from one of the major tendons that moves the hip. Because when you sit in a car and you're in the seated position, the muscles and tendons that move the hip joint are relatively biomechanically disadvantaged. So any injury or weakness will show in that position in particular. They're trying to get the leg out of the car. Some people will say, you know, I have to use my hand to pick my thigh up to put it outside the car. And then once the leg's a bit more straight, then I can get out of the car. So in that situation, I'd be assessing the probably the tendons on the side of the hip, that probably the gluteus medius or the gluteus minimus, to try to see what's going on there, because that's more likely to be the injury, which clearly hasn't resolved, because in 3 months, that injury should have resolved.
You know, you've talked about supporting structures, and earlier you mentioned that the hip joint actually has a rather wide range of motion. When a person can't achieve that range of motion, is that primarily due to weakness or stiffness in the supporting structures?
Okay, so the first thing, it's an interesting idea, because I've got a spectrum of patients now. And you would think that the generally stiff people have more of a problem, but it's actually the other way around. The generally hypermobile people have more of a problem. So, you know, some people are more flexible and bendy than others, and some people are generally a bit more stiff than others. So the idea is, you know, just having this session with my physiotherapist the other day, we were talking about, when does laxity equal instability? And what contribution does instability make to that topic from a body when you look at it? Because if somebody's joints are generally lax, then they have a tendency towards a particular type of injury. If somebody's joints are generally stiff, they actually have less preponderance towards one type of injury. They have more of a preponderance towards a different type of injury. And there's a gentleman I'm treating who I've seen for probably about 7 or 8 years now, who clearly has a problem with his hip joint. He clearly has osteoarthritis of the hip, and he clearly needs a hip replacement done at some stage. But what he said is, well, you know, since my whole family has it, and I know that I will need a hip replacement, I'm relatively young, I want to delay my hip replacement as long as possible. So with this particular gentleman, we worked on a strategy of stiffening his hip. We say, well, okay, you know, your ball and socket joints damaged, the two bearing surfaces are damaged, but let's make everything around your hip joint really, really strong and stiff. Mm-hmm. And when it's really, really strong and stiff, you can complain about the fact that you've got a little bit of restriction of movement, but you've got no pain and you can do all your day-to-day activities. You know, you can play squash, you can play golf, you can do all of those things. But you can't sit on the floor. No. You know, so there's many ways to cut the cake, as it were. And for this particular gentleman, what we decided was we took the stiffening strategy as a management strategy as opposed to a replacement strategy, because he knew what the consequences were and the fact that he'd have to have it revised eventually. And he'd seen his family members go through that, and he didn't want the same for him.
All right. Now, we've got a couple of callers lined up. We'll just go for a quick break for the market update, and we'll come back and get to your calls. So, Esther, do stay on the line. I'm speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh. You can call us 0377 332 900, WhatsApp 0187 89 8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio if you have questions for Dr. Rajesh. We're discussing hip problems. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Ik. On the line with me, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're discussing hip problems. You can call us at 0377 332 900 with your questions, or WhatsApp them to 0187 89 8899. Now we'll get to Esther, who's on the line. Esther, thanks for waiting. You have a question.
Yes. Good afternoon, doctor. My name is Esther. I just want to check. My son currently is 9 years old. When he was 4 years old, he tends to walk inward. And then I actually sent him recently to orthopedic to check. And then when we also went for an X-ray, and then the doctor found out that it's not the knee problem, it's on hips problem. Meaning to say the hips is not the ordinary shape like other ordinary kids, based on the X-ray. So the doctor say I need to do operation. Is it common, doctor, this kind of scenario?
Okay, thanks for taking the conversation there, Esther. The topic here is called, when I was training, it was called developmental dysplasia of the hip, or congenital dysplasia of the hip. So in order to understand this topic, what you have to understand is how the ball and socket form. So in the womb, the ball comes, then what happens is the ball pushes onto a piece of cartilage, and the piece of cartilage sort of wraps around the ball to form a socket. So that's sort of the embryology of formation of the ball and socket joint. What's quite common in the Malaysian community is this condition where the ball cannot push hard enough into the socket and the socket doesn't grip the ball hard enough. So that means that you have a shallow socket, and as a result of that, the ball and socket joint is not stable. So this condition is it's got an interesting place in the spectrum of orthopedic disorders, because it is one of those things that we actually screen for in newborn children. So in newborn children, one of the things that I did when I was an orthopedic trainee is we would traps around to the neonatal ward, ONG ward every morning, and we would catch all the babies who were born overnight, and we would examine their hips. There's a test, it's a maneuver called the Artoloni and Barlow's maneuver, and you use it to basically test whether the hip joint is in place or not. And the nurses used to absolutely hate us coming around, because all these babies would be nice and quietly sleeping, and then this large brutish orthopedic surgeon would come around, yank their hips about, make them cry, and then leave. And then, you know, they'd be there literally holding the baby. So the reason why we do those things is because we're screening for slightly poorly formed hips in the newborn. And if you detect a poorly formed hip in the newborn, what you can do is you can actually put them in, for example, double diapers so that the ball and socket forms correctly, or you can put them in sort of a harness to hold the legs in a certain position so that the ball and socket forms correctly. So I think to answer your question, is this a reasonable explanation of what's happening? Yes. Has it been detected correctly by X-ray? Clearly, yes. Does it need surgery for it? Answer is probably, because if the ball and socket aren't congruent, then it wears out very quickly. So this is sort of a little bit of a sensitive topic, because parents go, I don't want you to cut my child open. Okay, every parent will say that. But you also have to consider what happens if you leave this thing for the long term. There are some situations where you can safely leave something for the long term and say, que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. There are other situations where you go, if you don't treat this now, your later problem is going to be larger than the problem that you have as a result of the surgery. And yes, pediatric orthopedic surgical services are reasonably well developed in this country. So if you find a competent pediatric orthopedic surgeon, you're likely to be in good hands.
All right. Thank you so much for your question, Esther.
Can I ask one more last question?
Sure.
Okay, if this operation is not successful, that means there will be...
go ahead, Esther.
Can I check if, because the doctor did mention that the operation may not be 100% successful, if after 1 year they found it's not successful, they need to remove the blade and do the second time of operation?
Correct, because there are two parts. There's a ball part and a socket part. So usually at the start, we will address one or the other, depending on which we feel is more necessary. And then wait and see with growth. Because I said to you, the relationship is between the ball and the socket. There's an abnormal relationship between the ball and the socket. So we change one party first. We either change the ball first or the socket first. And then we wait and see whether they can get along and they form a good relationship or not. If they don't form a good relationship, then we go back and we operate on the other party, be it the ball or the socket. So that's basically why that story is there.
So I guess, just to follow on, we've lost Esther, but Esther, thanks for calling. I mean, I guess any parent's concern would be, how many times can a child go through these operations?
Yeah, look, I think that's a very reasonable question, but you have to understand what the lay of the land is. So in this case, it isn't sort of an infinite, we're going back and doing the same thing kind of situation. You know, if I read the situation correctly, and it's a standard surgical situation, it isn't that we're going to go back and keep trying until we get it right. It's, like I explained, a two-party thing. You address one party first. If that's not enough, then you address the other party.
Okay. We've got Johnny on the line now with a question. Hi, Johnny. Thanks for waiting. You have a question.
Yes. Good afternoon, Dr. Raj.
Afternoon, Johnny.
Yes, Johnny. Yes. Go ahead.
All right. I think that most of the hip issues is because of your lack of exercise on that region. But I'm practicing my Tai Chi quite extensively. I don't have this issue. Is there any particular exercise or physiotherapy on that region? So, you know, as we age, we can avoid these issues. Thanks, Dr. Raj.
Thanks, Johnny.
Okay, Johnny, they call the... Firstly, I think you're already doing the right thing because the Tai Chi type exercises are ones which require balance and coordination. And, you know, that's really what the hip is about. The hip is about balance and coordination. It's a little bit paradoxical because it's like saying, you know, the most amazing characteristic of sort of a bull is that it does ballet. Well, if you think about it, you know, a bull is big and muscular. You know, the most sort of spectacular thing is the fact that a bull can do ballet, mm-hmm. not the fact that it's big and muscular. And the hip joint's the same. The hip joint's sort of a very big, heavy, stable joint. The ballet part of it is how well coordinated it is in all the movements and functions that it has to do. So the Tai Chi is basically your absolutely right thing to do, which is to sort of put it through a ballet, as it were, of coordination and movement, as opposed to heavy gym work. You know, you can sort of, you can make a bull more muscular, but it's not impressive. You know, the bull doing different types of ballet is more impressive.
Karamjit was asking about exercises as well, which you've already addressed, but also wants to know what are the obvious and not so obvious hip problems that might be reported by the elderly.
Okay, so everybody's joints wear with age. Let's start with that. So everybody has some degree of wear and tear. You live long enough, it happens. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you can look at a person and you go, oh, this person look old. Similarly, I can look at an X-ray and say, this X-ray look old. Unfortunately, a lot of people will come away with an X-ray report that says osteoarthritis of the hip and go, oh no, that's bad. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not bad. It just says your hip look old. Well, if you're old, your hip look old, what do you want to do? Okay. So the first thing is don't put too much stock in what an X-ray report says. The second thing is to accommodate the fact that the hip problems will generally fall into two categories. And the one category is the, that's really irritating, but, you know, I can live with it. And the other is this is getting worse and worse and worse. So in general, hip complaints aren't silent. You know, that's one of the things that people worry about. They go, is there something going on in my hip that I don't know about that one day is going to cause something catastrophic? Answer is not usually. The hip's pretty noisy. If something's going to go wrong with the hip, you know, it'll announce itself. Mm. You'll know about it.
All right. So, you know, if you say that some amount of wear and tear is inevitable as you get older, you know, Karamjit, the second part of Karamjit's question, and I'm also curious to know, can you actually avoid hip problems when you get to a certain age?
You can stop getting older.
So that's the answer right there. Are there certain activities, perhaps even sporting activities or certain lifestyles that we may practice at a younger age that may predispose us to hip problems when we're older?
Not a huge amount. You know, like I said, the hips are remarkably adaptive. It's remarkably forgiving. Rarely would I find somebody who's done something or had an experience early in life that sort of comes back to bite them. You know, I had a very interesting Russian lady recently who had an infection of bone around the hip as an infant. And she had sort of a deformed hip and the hip was fundamentally unstable. And what was happening is the ball was trying to disengage from the socket. It was trying to come out all the time. And the tissues in the direction that it is trying to come out had been stretched. And the tissues in the opposite direction, which are trying to sort of hold it back in, had become very condensed and very tight. And as a result, she had sort of severe restriction of movement of the hip. So we treated her and got her hip range of movement back completely. Hmm. Then she had to work really hard with the physiotherapist to rebalance the muscles to put it back into place. So the most common thing that I see with regards to Asian hips, and there's a distinction between the Asian hip and the Caucasian hip. So the Caucasian hip wears out more quickly. I don't know why it is. If you look at a ratio of hip to knee replacements, when I trained in Australia, I probably have done 10 hip replacements for every knee replacement, which I did. Mm. In Malaysia, it's the other way around, right? So we do 10 knee replacements for every hip replacement. So hip damage in relation to knee damage, there's a much greater preponderance of knee damage than hip damage in Asian populations. The hip damage that I tend to see is usually because of a mild degree of dysplasia. So that means that that initial thing I told you about where the cup is supposed to hug the ball,
mm-hmm.
the cup isn't hugging the ball very tightly. The cup is hugging the ball quite loosely.
Not
so the
stable.
Ball's, yeah, it's, well, I wouldn't use the term not stable because that suggests that, you know, you've got the symptom of instability. I would say it's not congruent.
Mm.
So when it's not congruent, that means the two surfaces are not exactly matched.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have two bearing surfaces that are not exactly matched, of course, you're going to get more wear and tear than if the two bearing surfaces were exactly matched.
All right. Dr. Rajesh, we have a question from Adrian on WhatsApp. It's not about hips, but I'm just going to get you to perhaps see what you can do to help her out. She says she tripped on a log and fell forward with the full weight of her body landing on her palms. Her grip and fine motor skills in both hands were severely weakened for 3 months. She could not do things like twisting a bottle cap or lifting a kettle. Now she can, but she still can't push her entire body out from the swimming pool like she used to before. So she wants to know, has there been damage to her wrists?
No, you're missing the point. So this is the thing. You're missing the big picture. Where does the power and control of your wrists come from? It comes from further north. So you have to look more upstream. You have to look at... So this clinical picture's common. It's a pretty classical picture. And what happens is you actually whack your brachial plexus underneath the collarbone. And it's that leash of nerve that's controlling the hand that's causing your loss of power. So you're looking in the wrong place. You need to look further up north.
All right. Do you have a final question? A final message, Dr. Rajesh, for us today about hips?
Okay, what would I say? I would say that they're big, heavy, chunky, juicy, and impressive. but... their beauty comes from their grace, not from their power. So I would say that, you know, if you ask me to summarize hips, I'd say the beauty of hips comes from their grace, not their obvious power.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Rajesh. I've been speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh about hip problems. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.